Hello, this is The Money. I'm Richard Ailey. Today, a programme that first went out in August last year, on funerals.
It is quite a highly profitable industry. This is largely attributable to a lack of price transparency in the industry, and also because obviously it's a large moment in a lot of people's lives and they're willing to spend a lot to celebrate a person's life after they've passed. So there can be high prices charged because of that.
Running a funeral is like planning a wedding, only you only have 3 days to do it.
Unfortunately, we live nowadays in a very mourning-avoiding culture. So, you know, to a large extent, we've forgotten the importance and the meaning of a funeral. They're not a burden, they're not a fuss, but they're a privilege.
What's the most memorable funeral you remember?
The most memorable funeral I've been to was appalling. That's why it was memorable. It was a school friend who died. It was a traditional service held in a church, and the clergyman who took the service did not know my friend, and it didn't capture the personality.
Well, mine was my dad, who died when I was a young man, so of course I'm going to remember that. And I, Catholic service, out to the graveside, it was cold, it was wet. Mum and my sisters and I had sort of hysterical giggling in the car. Everyone came back to ours afterwards for sandwiches and whiskey, I think.
I've been privileged to be a funeral director for almost 30 years, and the change, it's quite dramatic.
Darren Eddy is a past president of the Australian Funeral Directors Association. He lives in Albury, on the border of New South Wales and Victoria.
When I first began, and look, to preface that, I am from country New South Wales, so I deal a little bit more so with having a bit more time available for funerals than my metropolitan colleagues do. But when I first began, nearly every service was held in a church. They were a Christian service. There were hymns. There was very little option for the family to have input. Generally, the clergy would make a decision about the readings and the hymns, those sorts of things. Almost every service was a burial. There was no such thing as a condolence book for people to sign. The only photos that were at a service may have been a photo of the deceased that was put on the casket. And then we all travelled out to the cemetery in cortege. And look, in those days, everyone went back to the family home to have a cuppa and sandwiches with family. Now, today, it's vastly different. The great majority of services are not religious. We're finding less and less people choosing the church as the place for the venue. We have photo tributes. I mean, funeral directors are now have identified that families' needs have become very different. I mean, we're dealing with a lot of technology. Families are looking for things like, you know, memorial books that are more specific, webcasting funerals for family members who can't attend that are overseas, video recording. And funeral directors are able to identify, okay, look, this is a need from the family, and really have been brave enough to invest in the technology to allow that sort of thing to happen. But it has changed dramatically.
What does a funeral director do? Asha Dooley runs Grace Funerals at the foot of the Blue Mountains, west of Sydney.
Our job is very detailed. It probably starts before the phone call. I think a lot of people these days are actually using the internet, Google, to go through websites. So I'd say our website management is highly key to our first calls. And then the real first interaction with a family would be what we call the first call, the first time they call us. And that can be prior to someone's passing, or it could be after they've died, at which point we try and give as much information as we can. Some people want more, some people want less. And then we invite people in to meet with us. Once we've done that, we then go through and plan the full funeral. We look after absolutely everything, from audio visual to looking after your loved one in person, and then we'll bring you and conduct the funeral.
She only came to the business about 4 years ago.
I've got an extensive hospitality background. That's actually where I did my university education. It was in hospitality, and then I worked in 5-star hotels internationally and within Australia for a number of years, focusing on all sorts of service-related areas, events background, and then finally into training and HR, which was my final roles in the hotels before I chose to join our family business.
And how transferable have those skills been?
exceptionally transferable. Basically, running a funeral is like planning a wedding, only you only have 3 days to do it. So my events background has been very useful in that. And then running a small business, you know, I've been able to use my HR skills from that. And in terms of service, I've been in customer service roles since I was about 10 years old. So being able to interact with people on a very intimate basis has really come from my hotel background and then also from other hospitality roles that I've had throughout my career.
So if I come to you tomorrow needing a funeral, what's it going to cost?
That is a how long is a piece of string question. Funerals vary in cost from a number of different areas. So the difference between, say, let's look at the basics, cremation to burial. Obviously, land in Sydney in particular is quite expensive, so therefore a burial, just by matter of fact, will be more expensive than a cremation. The difference in coffin prices, our business's coffin prices range from about $8,000 to $995. So there's a huge difference in cost depending on what you as the consumer choose. Then also flowers is a big difference as well. So you could have flowers that cost, say, $700, or you could have flowers that only cost $200. So there's a big difference in cost in that. I think the average funeral in and around Sydney, certainly with us, is probably about $6,500 for a cremation, but it very much depends on what the family chooses. We are very transparent with our prices. So when we show you coffins, all of the prices are there to see. They're all on our website to see. All of our flowers are the same. And then we can talk about venue costs as needed, depending on what you'd like to do.
Ash's business is small, but not tiny. And Sam Johnson at research firm Ibis World says the whole sector is bigger than you think.
The funeral directors, crematoria and cemeteries industry is $1.1 billion in terms of revenue.
And how many firms is that?
There are around 800 currently. There are new entrants, but there's also consolidation. So it's slow growth in business numbers.
And what about the growth of the industry more generally? How does it compare to the overall economy?
Generally in line. The pace is slightly slower. It's estimated to be at about 2.5% growth over the past 5 years, annualized.
Is it profitable?
It is quite a highly profitable industry. This is largely attributable to a lack of price transparency in the industry, and also because obviously it's a large moment in a lot of people's lives and they're willing to spend a lot to celebrate a person's life after they've passed. So there can be high prices charged because of that.
So what you're sort of saying is that people aren't quite sure what they're getting, but they're vulnerable.
Yes, that's correct. And also, it's not always a case of they're being taken advantage of. Often they are willing to spend a premium at a time like that.
All I can speak, and I mean, I don't know really what profit margins any other funeral director sets. I mean, that's a question for each. But I know from myself, the profit that we make in our business is generally fed back into the business. I mean, it's expensive to run a funeral home. I mean, just to give you an idea, if you purchase a new hearse, you're looking at anywhere up to $200,000. So there are expenses quite a bit. But generally what you find too is that you need to filter that money back into the business to make sure you've got the upgraded audio technology, to make sure you can provide a photo tribute at a church, but also to make sure you've got the latest transfer vehicles to be able to transfer deceased from the point where they passed with dignity and care and discretion and those things. So generally you find that most of that, certainly for the family owned, most of that money goes back into running and improving and upgrading their business. From a corporate perspective, I have no idea. But I mean, look, you can certainly, I would imagine you would be able to find that information online. But certainly from a, family owned businesses, most of that profit goes back into improving the service we offer.
In May, Sydney University accounting professor Sandra Vanderlaan released It's Your Funeral, a report that criticised the industry.
I was watching a documentary on TV called Tender, which was about a local community group trying to get a non-profit funeral provider off the ground. And it sort of piqued my interest. There was a lot of people in the documentary talking about the expense around funerals. So I started to do a little bit of digging. And then a couple of weeks later, my sister died and I had to live the dream of looking at funeral prices and trying to help her children organise her funeral. And I think that's possibly what drove me to push further and harder on this, is that personal experience I had was very unpleasant and I just felt like someone needed to talk about it.
Her report considered two products. One was the basic funeral.
a basic funeral is, and that's the term that's used in the legislation in New South Wales, it's basically arranging the funeral, transportation of the body, storage of the body, preparation of the body, the least expensive coffin, and the compulsory certificates, the doctor's certificates and the cremation certificates. And we looked at that basic funeral that included a cremation.
She also looked at another product, one that many people don't know about.
A direct committal is, I think they're advertised online as, you know, a no attendance funeral. So the body is just collected from wherever the person dies, which is usually in an institution, hospital, nursing home or the like, and taken either to the funeral director's storage facilities or directly to the crematorium and disposed of. And you still get the ashes at the end of that. And as I said, that can cost you as little as $1,200. And last year when David Bowie died, he had that done and it cost $750.
Professor van der Land's main criticism is what she calls the industry's opacity.
I suppose that's the thing that I found from my own experience and even from conducting the study. The pricing is very opaque. It's very, very difficult to find out exactly what you're buying and what the costs of the individual items are, even though in various states it is regulated. And if you ask for a basic funeral, you're supposed to get an itemised price list. You invariably start off with the position of funeral is so many thousand dollars. And then you have to dig into that, what's included. And it's difficult to find out without being quite assertive, which most people, when they're arranging a funeral, are not in that mindset.
She found that many people don't realise what's included and what's not included in the price.
That's really where a lot of the dissatisfaction with the services that funeral directors provide is coming from, because people think they're buying a particular product with a particular set of inclusions, and it's not until they actually want to engage in that that they find out that other things cost them more money.
Why do people want to spend more? Because people do, don't they? They tend not to go for the cheapest option.
I think people are encouraged by funeral directors to try and provide the person who's died this good send-off. And so the good send-off requires a nicer coffin or more flowers or nicer catering or whatever it is, where funeral directors quite often have large markups.
But Darren Eddy says funeral directors aren't making money on flowers and catering.
Well, it's inappropriate to do it. It's a disbursement, and I'm sure Fair Trading would have an issue with you providing flowers that cost you $200 and charging the family $300, because the family can just as easy go in and order those flowers for the same price. Look, the reason funeral directors do these on behalf of the family is because family has enough things to think about on their mind without having to travel to a number of florists, put together notices in the newspaper, contact clergy. So funeral directors do that on their behalf, but certainly those costs, what it costs the funeral director is what it costs the family.
He also rejects the claim that funeral directors aren't transparent in their pricing.
It's interesting because a lot of my colleagues, when I've discussed this with them, they said, look, we have no issues about giving people an itemised estimate. In fact, in New South Wales, it's law. Fair Trading states that you must provide an itemised estimate prior to the funeral. And certainly our funeral association, a part of our membership, is exactly the same thing. You must provide the family with a fully itemised estimate of what the costs are. So that is a little bit confusing for me as to the professor's feeling that we're not transparent when I believe it's quite the opposite.
This is The Money on RN, the ABC radio app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Addy. Today, we're looking at the economics of the funeral industry, which are changing right now. Here's Sam Johnson from IBIS World.
While it's undergoing a period of consolidation, it is largely driven by a small handful of players, InvoCare being the largest firm in the industry with slightly more than 35%. Then there's also private firms that are acquiring more rural funeral homes. So that's driving economies of scale for those companies and obviously removing some smaller players from the industry. There's also been an emergence of price comparison sites for funerals because the industry has come under scrutiny for a lack of price transparency. There's been a response where companies like Easy Funerals, Gathered Here, and Compare Funerals offer price comparison, some from participating funeral homes and some who are just listed on the website based on prices.
Invocare are behind brands like White Lady Funerals and Simplicity Funerals.
They've got several national brands and several regional brands, but ways that they do take advantage of the consolidation, despite keeping many separate brands, is through services that can be provided for all of their brands, such as logistics in transporting bodies, coffin manufacturing, things like that.
And this model of consolidating different brands and getting scale is being taken up by another company, Propel Funeral Partners.
They're relatively new, so they're a private investment company that has been acquiring more rural funeral homes rather than Invocare, which has mainly been around main cities and larger towns. They're expected to have about 68 funeral service outlets, Propel Funeral Partners, which has grown quite quickly, and that's across Australia and New Zealand as well.
I think they're now the second biggest provider, and I read last month, I think, that they're exploring prospects of an IPO.
Yes, yeah. So they are still in the stage of exploring. They haven't, well, it hasn't been announced whether they've confirmed that they're going to float or not, but yeah, they've looked into that with Bell Potter.
Sam, what effect does increasing life expectancy have?
Life expectancy is, as you said, it's rising, which delays demand for industry services, but the pace of increasing life expectancy is mostly outstripped by the size of the population that is aging. So despite people living longer on average, there are more people reaching, you know, the age around when people tend to pass away. So that trend is influencing demand for industry services slightly more than increasing life expectancy. Invocare has actually explicitly stated that that is a significant part of their growth strategy. Currently, they're seeing about a 1% on average growth rate in deaths per year, but they expect that to grow to 2.5% within the next two decades.
And there's something else. We're prepared to pay more.
I suppose the state of people when they have a friend or family member pass away, wanting to honor the life of the person who has passed away, is likely to continue driving consumers to pay a premium for the service. It's more of an event as opposed to just a ceremony to mourn and bury an individual. It's more of an event to celebrate the life of the individual, which is a trend that is expected to drive growth as well.
On The Money Today, we're looking at funerals. I'm Richard Adie. As you've heard, the average funeral costs $6,000 to $7,000 with a cremation. Depending on your circumstances, that's anything from a not insubstantial sum to a lot of money. Many people want to spare their families from having to find it, and one way of doing this is funeral insurance. But is it worth it? Philippa Eyre is with the Consumer Action Law Centre.
Look, it does depend on your personal circumstances. But it's important to bear in mind what the risks are when you take out funeral insurance. So what it is a type of life insurance, and the sum insured is designed to only cover the cost of the funeral. Despite that, the premiums can actually be quite high, and they can also increase every single year. Sometimes they get so high that people can no longer afford them, and then they essentially lose all the money that they put in.
Have you dealt with anyone like that?
We assisted a woman who took out funeral insurance when she was only in her late 30s, and she was told specifically that the premiums would not increase for 5 years, but unfortunately they did, and they increased very steeply every single year. And 5 years later, she was paying $30 a fortnight when she started out paying only $17 a fortnight. And she had at that point paid over $5,000 and she was only in her 40s. That price was so high for her that she couldn't afford it anymore.
So what happened?
In that particular case, we were able to negotiate a settlement for her. So in some circumstances, people could be entitled to a refund of their premiums. For example, if the salesperson provided you with misleading information and you relied on that information when you made your decision to take out the policy.
So what would she like to see changed?
One of the massive problems is funeral insurance products are often sold to really young people. And ASIC looked at this a couple of years ago, and they found that for one of the insurers, 50% of their customers were under the age of 20 years. You know, that's pretty shocking. You know, funeral insurers should not be targeting young people, especially. And also the caps on the premiums are a really important step to ensure that people don't pay significantly more than what they get back.
So if you're concerned about funeral insurance that you've signed up for or you're thinking about, do you need to see a lawyer?
There's some really great information online that you can look at to work out what the options are. It's the ASIC Money Smart website. So it's moneysmart.gov.au, and they have some great information on paying for your funeral. If you have taken out one of these policies and you think you've been missold the funeral insurance product, it is a good idea to seek legal advice.
We'll put some links and some phone numbers on the Money's homepage. There are alternatives to funeral insurance. You can do it the old-fashioned way and gradually save up, or you can prepay. Sandra Vanderlaan.
Most funeral directors offer a prepaid or pre-need funeral service. I believe that they're possibly a good product. The money that you spend buying that product is regulated, so it has to be invested and what have you, and you're sure that you're going to get a funeral at the end of it. Some of the information that I've had around prepaid funerals is, in terms of not great activities, is upselling once someone's died, saying, oh, your mother really would have liked this better coffin than she previously bought, or more flowers or what have you. But that seems to be the only real downside of a prepaid funeral, is the upselling to the deceased family after the person's died.
Professor Vanderlaan is critical of the funeral industry. What would be the first thing she'd change?
To reduce the opacity around pricing and what have you, I think we need a product information standard so people know exactly what they get. And the quotes are itemised, so you know exactly what you're paying for. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to pay X amount of dollars for anything, but I think it's really important that people know what they're paying for. In other industries, we expect that. You know, you don't pay for a bundled up product.
As you heard earlier, Darren Eddy of the Funeral Directors Association says he thinks members already do that. But Sandra Vanderlaan isn't finished.
I'd also like to see more consistent, coherent legislation around different things across the country. It seems strange that in New South Wales you can have limited tenure over burial sites, and in Victoria it's perpetual. So there's all sorts of regulations like that that don't make any sense and step over a line, and the rules are different. And finally, I'd like to see probably some sort of licensing around funeral directors. At the moment, basically anyone can hang up a shingle and say they're a funeral director.
On this, the Funeral Directors Association agrees.
We're very happy for that to be the case, and in fact have been a part of those particular inquiries to say, look, we do see a need to regulate funeral directors. One of the suggestions that we made to a parliamentary inquiry in New South Wales and Victoria was to start up what's called a negative licensing. So that basically means that each funeral director then must abide by an information standard or a minimum set of standards. And if you are found to breach that particular standard or code of practice, then you can receive a ban from working in the funeral industry.
Darren Eddy's also on the same page as Sandra Vanderlaan when it comes to harmonising regulations.
The pipe dream, the one thing that I really, and I think every funeral director would love to see happen in our lifetime, is the uniformity of paperwork across the country. Every state, they have a different certificate of death. They have a different certificate for cremation. The way deaths are registered is different. And it can be very difficult because we get a lot of people who pass away in other states. So that's the pipe dream that every funeral director has, is that one day the government will be able to come together and have a uniform set of paperwork, which will make things so much easier and expedite things for families as well.
And families are the point here. They're the clients. For the most part, they're ultimately who the funerals are for. And Asha Dooley says these ceremonies are really important.
Through studies that grief counsellors have done, we know that if you don't have a funeral service, and that doesn't have to be a funeral service in the way that you know it, it doesn't have to be at a church or even a crematorium chapel, but if you can have a time where people are invited to come and see a coffin ideally or have a viewing and to say goodbye and to have some form of ritual which can, as a funeral, we know that it is long-term much better for your grief. We know that the healing process long-term is going to be easier for you than to ignore that. I'm a really big advocate for funerals, not because I run funerals, but because I think it's much better for our grief long-term.
So have you thought about your own funeral?
Oh, I plan it daily. It's always a bit of fun. Personally, I'd like mine to be a bit more of a cocktail party event at the moment, probably an evening event, definitely outdoors, ideally probably overlooking some water somewhere. Lots of fun music, and I don't want anything stiff or boring, but I do want to have a funeral. I think it's highly important to have a funeral service. I'd like the coffin to be there, but I'd still like it to be a little bit like me, you know, a bit more irreverent and fun, and I like to have a glass of champagne upon arrival, and I want everyone to have a nice old time, but still to have a formalised funeral service, because I think that's highly important, but to have it in a way that would be more personal for me.
Have you thought about your own funeral?
I haven't thought about it at all, except maybe a jazz funeral in New Orleans. But I've spoken to my parents about what they'd like to do, which I think is fantastic. My mum wants to donate her body to science, and somebody just whips in and takes the body away, and you've got all that extra cash for the memorial or drinks or whatever it is. And Dad wants to be cremated. I think it's all about the memorial service.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm a Catholic, but I don't know if I'll do it in church. I do know that I want people to have a good time. I have selected the music, a bit of music to make people feel sad at first, but a very life-affirming song to finish.
So which one?
Asha Dooley is the General Manager of Grace Funerals and Blue Mountains Funerals. You also heard from Darren Eddy, past President of the Australian Funeral Directors Association, Professor Sandra Vanderlaan from the University of Sydney, Philippa Eyre of the Consumer Action Law Centre, and Sam Johnson, who's at IBIS World. You'll find more information on our homepage at abc.net.au/rn. The Money is produced by Kate Piercy. Our sound engineer is Russell Stapleton. I'm Richard Eddy.